Hello, everybody. This is Mark Merchant from Nederland, Texas, and you're listening to 870 The Flyway.
There's mom and papa for a little boy Ned, raising on the banks of a riverbed. Well, a houseboat tied to a big tall tree, a home for my papa and my mama and me. The clock strikes three and papa jumps to his feet. Already mama's cooking papa something to eat. At half past papa, he's ready to go. He jumps in his bureau head down the bayou. He's got the fishing line strung across the Louisiana River. Gotta catch a big fish for us to eat. Setting traps in the swamp, catching anything he can. Gotta make a living, he's a Louisiana man. Gotta make a living, he's a Louisiana man.
That is the raging Cajun, the great Doug Kershaw, with a snippet of his classic, Louisiana Man, Hello. This is Foxy welcoming you to 870 The Flyway podcast. I am filling in for Gordy, who is out brushing duck blinds today. Gordy asked me to introduce today's podcast, a great freewheeling visit with a real Louisiana man, Mark Merchant. Mark is a diehard waterfowler who has written a fantastic book filled with new delicious recipes for serving duck and goose, and a lot more interesting wildfowl topics besides. That's today on 870, The Flyway.
Hey, is that one of those new Wyatt's Waterfowl Company 4-in-1 duck whistles I keep hearing about?
It sure is, Bill. What do you think?
Man, that really sounds great. What sounds does it make besides pintail?
It makes a great widgeon and teal and a mallard drake.
Cool.
Yep, it has a lot better sound and volume than the old police whistle-style 4-in-1 calls.
Yep.
Wyatt's call is a great confidence call for finishing birds that have heard nothing but endless mallard calls all the way from Canada.
Bill, I hear Wyatt is only 10 years old, and he invented the call on his own?
That's right, and his whole family is involved in producing these great little calls. It's a terrific new call with a classic American backstory.
Man, I'm sold. Can I get one at sporting goods stores?
Right now, order direct from Wyatt through his Facebook page.
Hey, here comes some teal. Give him a little music on that Wyatt waterfowl call.
All right, 870 of the Flyway. Welcome back, everybody. And man, if you're a waterfowler, you're in for a treat because we've got a guy on here coming up who's been down the road. He's a waterfowl hunter with a big W. He's a scientist, he's an educator, and believe it or not, he's also the author of a fantastic cookbook, Waterfowl Cuisine from Field to Table. Welcome to the show, Mark Merchant.
Thank you, Gordy. I appreciate it. I thank you for having me on today.
Well, you're majorly welcome, and thanks for taking the time out. We'll make this brief. You've got to be a teacher directly. You teach at the university level. Tell us just a little bit about yourself on that basis.
Yeah, I am a professor of biochemistry. I have a PhD from Texas A&M in biochemistry and biophysics. I've been teaching at McNeese State University in Lake Charles, Louisiana, for the last 23 years. Most of my research is focused on alligators and crocodiles and biochemistry and immunology of those animals. And I've been all over the world catching crocodiles in the jungles of Africa and in Australia and all over South America and Southeast Asia. And man, I love to kill birds. I've been a longtime waterfowler since my grandfather brought me out and put me on his lap, and I shot a bird on the water when I was 6 years old in 1972, I believe.
What kind of a bird was it? What kind of a duck was it?
A little blue-winged teal.
A blue-winged teal. Everybody starts with teal.
It's funny because he'd bring me out, and you know, and I raised my kids like he raised me. He would put a BB gun in my hand, so if I made a mistake, I would poke a hole in his skin and not kill him. And you know, birds would come in. I was with him and his brother-in-law, which was my uncle, my grandmother's brother, and I'd shoot that BB gun. He'd say, "Oh, great shot." And he'd throw me a stack of birds. I thought I was killing those birds with that little red rider. That was so funny when I look back at that.
Oh, yeah. Did you ever knock one down with the BB gun?
Oh, I thought I knocked them all down.
There you go. There you go. You know? I tell you, how many of us have come up the same way? So that's cool, Mark Merchant. Yeah. All right. Let's transition to the to the point where you come up with Waterfowl Cuisine from Field to Table. It's a self-published labor of love that you put together based on your experiences and the recipes you found. And the reason, as I understand it, and you can elaborate on this, is that you basically got tired of the same three or four old recipes, you know, the Campbell's soup on the breast of the duck, and then making summer sausage, which is a big thing with a lot of guys. There's got to be a better way. You know, these birds deserve more, and they're delicious. And so tell us how you came up with the cookbook and some of the recipes in it.
Yeah, well, you know, I was raised as a Cajun kid, and I spent a lot of time in the kitchen. I love cooking, and I love to create things. I'm a scientist. I'm also a creator and a inventor. And I ate ducks, raised eating ducks and all kinds of wild game, like many of the people listening today. And you know, and there's only so many days a year I can eat jalapeno duck poppers, and I love duck jerky, but my goodness, I mean, I can't eat it every day. And I certainly love fajitas, and I was looking for more ways to do things with birds because I hunt a lot. I make about probably in the neighborhood of 60 hunts a year. And I arrange my fall schedule at the university so that I can hunt every Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday. And I do. And I bring home a lot of birds. And it's just, you know, it's just the same recipes over and over. So I started looking at ways to prepare these birds differently. And this really started about 15-ish years ago. And I started, you know, preparing birds in different ways and trying different things and trying to do different things with them so that I wouldn't have to eat, 100 times jalapeno poppers and eat jerky every day, you know, like you say, you know.
Right.
So I started to do, trying to think outside the box, which is really what scientists do on a daily basis. So I tried to do that. Okay. And, I started coming up with these recipes, and I really started with things that I grew up eating in the deep South, stuffed bell peppers and cabbage rolls and things like that. And a lot of what I consider to be Southern comfort food. Down here, everybody makes gumbo with ducks, but not many people make cabbage rolls or stuffed bell peppers. So I thought, well, will ducks work in that? And the answer is yes, they will beautifully.
And they're in the book.
They're in the book. These are recipes that are in the book. Now, and then I thought, you know, well, if it works with food in the deep South, I actually teach in Louisiana and do a lot of hunting, but I also live across the border in Texas. And Mexican food is obviously a big deal in Texas.
Uh-huh.
I live in a town of 17,000 people that has eight Mexican food restaurants.
All right.
Unbelievable. So I started making duck tacos and duck flautas and duck quesadillas, and fantastic, you know, and that kind of led me down that road. And then I started looking into Asian because I love, love, love Asian dishes. And of course, everybody does a stir fry, but I have a stir fry in there that doesn't have any soy sauce. It's really interesting. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a recipe I ran across when I was in Cambodia a number of years ago.
No kidding.
And wow. I added an Italian section and just kept going and going and going. And I said, well, at some point, I'm going to have to publish this.
Right.
I could, you know, it's a never ending chase, but it was fun. It was fun. It was like, and as you mentioned, it was a labor of love. It took me far longer and far more effort than I had ever imagined. But I'm very proud of the product we have.
Well, it's a beautiful book, I'll tell you that. And I've got to tell you, we get a lot of cookbooks just submitted, what we call over the transom, that folks just send to us. And a lot of them are they're very nice, and everybody's put a lot of heart and soul into them. But I tell you what, there's an awful lot of repetition out there. This is not repetition of the same old thing, guys. Those of you who are out there listening, these are all different recipes, very well laid out and organized, and each one has its own image. Did you do your own photography by chance?
I did with my iPhone 12.
There you go. The most popular pro photographers format in the world right now is the iPhone phone, which it used to be the Hasselblad, but oh well.
And that's another thing, Gordy. I really, you know, I could have put a black and white photos in there. I could have put a photo on every third recipe to save space and time and money.
Right.
I really wanted a nice full colored figure for every single recipe. And, and it just makes the book more appealing in my opinion.
Yeah. And that says a lot for you, Mark, and for the quality of the book that the guys and gals out there listening, you're going to get. Which of these recipes, and it makes my mouth water here, even early in the morning, to read about some of these recipes. Is there one that rises to the top for you at the moment, a leader?
Oh, man, there's two or three.
Like trying to pick a favorite kid, you know. But
Yeah, that's just it. They say everybody has a favorite kid, but no one talks about it.
Right.
but, you know, I really like the duck enchiladas. They're pretty easy to make. I just made them for everybody at the duck camp during teal season here a couple weeks ago, and they just go nuts for that stuff.
What about those?
If you've ever had a hot Nashville chicken sandwich, I've got that recipe in there with duck, and it is just fabulous. I did that one the other day, too. And then my mind just swims with this stuff. If you eat Vietnamese food and you've ever had a banh mi sandwich, I replicated that pork, that grilled, wonderful, sweet, smoky grilled Vietnamese pork, and it's in there, and that is a showstopper.
Yeah, well, I bet your family and friends just hate the fact that you've done all these recipes because they get the benefit.
They all had to suffer through me.
Suffer
with the recipe.
Oh, we should all suffer so much, you know. Yeah. Listen, Mark, we're trying to beat a deadline here for you and for us too. The I want to point out to the folks that you've added some value here with sections about care for your waterfowl in the field, which is important because, I mean, I'm amazed, and I'll keep this brief, I'm amazed at how many people are so cavalier with their game once they kill it. You know, it gets warm, it gets laid out in the sun, and it goes hours between the kill, and then they don't say, I don't really like it, it doesn't taste very good. Well, of course not, man. I mean, you take a steak and leave it out for 12 hours in the sun, it's not going to taste that great either. But anyway, you've covered that. Tell us a little bit about that. And also about, I want to hear about waxing ducks, because most
of well, first of all, you know, when I first wrote this book, I don't know who's going to end up with this book in their hands. I think most people know how to clean birds. But, you know, there may be some novice hunters out there who really don't really know much about cleaning birds. So I showed the step-by-step method of how I, you know, breast birds, I actually skin them and breast them, and how to, you know, cut down the breastbone like you do a chicken. I just kind of a simple that. I think most people know that, but some people may not. And I talk about, you know, the care of any wild game, be it a deer. You know, you want to get that deer gutted immediately, get all the heat out. In fact, when we kill big game, first thing I do is I gut it and I stuff a 20-pound bag of ice in the body cavity to start cooling that thing down from the inside, you know. But we do thing with ducks. Like down here, you know, like during teal season, I was hunting the other day, and in the afternoon, it was 94 degrees, 95 degrees. And you throw those ducks out in the sun for 45 minutes or an hour, and that just doesn't help. So I put them in the shade or try to get them up off the ground so the ants can't get them. And down here is a big deal. But, you know, you try to take care of that game. Put them in the shade. I know I've got friends who actually bring little small ice chests, and they'll throw their birds in an ice chest as soon as they kill them.
Right.
And start cooling those things down. And then how to prepare, you know, a lot of people like to pluck birds, and that's fine. I pluck some birds too. And I don't know how widespread waxing birds is. I don't know if that's a South thing or, but I grew up waxing birds where there's a step-by-step of where you can get wax and how you do this. But you take a bird and you cut the feet off and you cut the wings off and you dip it in hot wax, melted wax, and you can get these big blocks of wax. And you put it in a big pot on a burner, and then when you pull the bird out, all the feathers stick together, and you peel them off in sheets. And so you can literally wax birds. You can pluck birds in your kitchen. Yeah. It's almost no mess at all. Yeah, I usually do it out in the driveway drinking beer, but you know.
Sure. It's like peeling a hard-boiled egg.
Yeah, I mean all the wax, you know, gels on and hardens on these feathers, and you just peel them off in big sheets, and it's just so fast and easy. Oh, it's so easy.
Yeah,
so
I've been easy. I've been in duck camps where the junior members, the kids are in charge of dipping and waxing the.
Let me tell you something, buddy. I've been there. I've been there as a kid. When I was a young guide, they'd come plop. Those guides would start coming in back, you know, back when there was a 10-point, you know, the 100-point system. They'd come in, and me and three or four young guides, we would wax 120 birds in an afternoon. Got pretty good at that.
Yeah. But on the other hand, that sure beats having to hand pluck them, you know, individually.
Terms of the mess, and in terms of time and effort, everything. It's fantastic.
Yeah. And it gives you a good result too, a nice smooth result. Does. Okay.
Very good.
All righty. Now we talked about the book, but up to the point of how do we get a copy of this into folks' hands, because I know they're going to want them. Great Christmas gift idea too, by the way, for folks that waterfowlers who have supposedly everything. Well, they don't have everything because they got to have this book. How do they get one?
Well, you can email me. I've been selling them on Facebook. If you go to my Facebook page, Mark Merchant, there's a couple of us out there. I think I'm on the on my photo. My current photo has me in an alligator. I'm doing some alligator work. But if you find me, you can send me a DM and say, how do I do this? And I can give you – I usually sell them on Facebook through Venmo. You could probably send me an email to my university, and I could respond to you that way. And my email address – my name is Mark Merchant. My email address is mmerchant, mmerchant, at – my university is McNeese, at McNeese, McNeese .edu for education. Mmerchant at McNeese.edu. You could send me a Facebook DM. The books are $30 and $5 shipping. And the reason I do that is because a lot of people just come pick them up from my house down here. And a lot of people see me out in the marsh or the rice and they say, hey, give me a book. I keep some in my truck. So I had to separate the shipping. So if you send me... I usually do this by Venmo is the most popular method. I also take PayPal, but Venmo is better. But if you contact me, I'll send you my Venmo information and you can send me and I will ship that either that day or the next day. And then you'll have it. For the duck season. I mean, you'll be able to experiment. And the main thing I want to say is that, you know, I really want to create a simple, easy book to follow with common ingredients. Easy instructions. I don't want you to have to drive an hour and a half to some Metroplex and go to some specialty buy shop and buy something for $50 an ounce because, you know, it's some weird stuff. I've adapted these recipes and made them simple, and I really tried to do that. So hopefully you guys will enjoy this book.
Well, I'd have to say that it would be, you have to look long and hard to find somebody who wouldn't benefit and enjoy this book. The cuisine in it is basic and earthy and is very much in keeping with our sport. You know, this is a man's a cookbook, but the ladies are going to like it too. I know also, so I want to mention too, you've got a couple of different go-to spices, spice companies, and of course, being from the Deep South, high-quality ones. Let's mention them and their relationship to your thing.
Yeah. One of them is Tony Sacheres. And I believe, Tony Sacheres, I remember when they started when I was a kid, and I grew up with Tony Sacheres' spice mixture, dry spice mixture. I'm pretty sure you can get that probably nationwide now at any
grocery. Oh, yeah.
But I use a lot of that. I literally use that for salt in my house. I mean, I eat a lot of spicy food, but I hardly use salt. So you'll see that in all the recipes. Mm-hmm. And if you don't like that, then you can use your own spice mixture. Just use salt. That's fine. I also use a lot of Rotel tomatoes, and I want to make it clear that before I put their name in the book, I always put the emblem indicating that those are trademark names. Mm-hmm. And I contacted the company and I got their permission to use their recipes, their names. So I wouldn't do that without contact. I tried to do it right, so just pop them in there.
Yeah.
Last thing I need is a lawsuit. I'm just
absolutely.
A bubba just like you guys. And that's another thing. You know, this book was written by a hunter for hunters. And mm-hmm. I understand that you guys don't want super complex recipes. You don't want to spend all day. Now, some stuff is a little bit more complex, but I try to keep everything super simple.
Sure, sure. Absolutely. And you have the layout and everything is easily read, which is appreciated by those of us who are graybeards out there. And it's not 5-point type. We've got a little bit of time left. Let's talk hunting. You mind about talking about hunting today?
Yeah, man. Let's talk a little hunting. I love it.
I happen to know, based on our earlier conversations, brief conversations, that you had a whale of a teal season down there in South Louisiana, where a lot of people maybe didn't. And there's one reason why, and that starts with a big D, doesn't it?
No, man, we had a drought. I think everybody's been under a drought this year, but we've had a drought. I'm 57 years old, and this may be the worst drought I've ever seen. It was worse than that 1999-2000 drought. It was worse than the 2011-2012 drought. And it was so bad that the rice field that I hunt during teal season, this buddy of mine owns it. And it's not really a lease. It's just a bunch of buddies getting together hunting, a bunch of buddies. We have a camp down there. Mm-hmm. It was so bad. This rice field is literally 30 miles, probably 25 miles off the Gulf Coast. But all the rice field canals that you pump water from to flood the fields had saltwater intrusion because the drought was so bad because we're so close to the Gulf.
Well, wait. Tell us, those of us who aren't scientists, in a sentence or two, what that means.
Okay, well, these canals end up running south out and toward the Gulf, which is saltwater out of the Gulf of Mexico to saltwater. Sure. And the drought is so bad that the saltwater backed up in these canals 20 miles, 25 miles inland.
Amazing.
And so, you know, the way you grow rice is, you know, you flood your crop and you grow it, and then you drain the water off and you harvest it, and then you flood it again for second growth. Mm-hmm. And that's usually right about the time we're cutting in. They're usually flooding it again right for teal season. So we flood it for teal season as well.
Okay.
Well, in the interim, but they flooded it in April or March to grow the rice, and they drew the water off. And this drought just went, and the water, the canals that you draw the water from are just got saltier and saltier and saltier. And now the farmers can't pump water into their field. Salt water had ruined your field. And they couldn't hunt. They had no water. Now, luckily, my guy has about a 450-foot deep well. So we just pump water out of the ground and into our fields. And so, I mean, we were in a huge area of drought with no water. And, man, we had this oasis of ducks. And, I mean, I went out there three days before the season to actually cut our levees with some hedge trimmers, you know, because the Johnson grass, the weeds grow up real high on the levees. That's where we hide. But it's, you know, they're up over your head. Mm-hmm. So I went out there to trim it. And I think I scared up probably about 8,000 birds out of a quarter section of rice.
Wow.
I was just scaring up hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. And they'd fly 300, 400 yards and go right back down the other side of the field. It was nuts.
Amazing.
So come opening day, we had two blinds that were about 600 yards apart. And I had eight guys, and counting me, eight guys in my blind. And my buddy over there had eight guys in his blind. And we killed a 96-bird limit in 36 minutes. It was just insane. It was a sight to behold. And of course, you know, we had the only water in town. So the more we hunted, the next day we killed 96 birds, but it took about another hour. And the next day we killed, and then it got to where we weren't killing them because we were just, their birds didn't have anywhere else to go. We were running them out. But
yeah. Amazing.
Well, wow. it was on there for a while there.
And your dog was filing for some kind of an extension of his vacation or day off.
Oh yeah. I hunt every day. Well, the great thing about this rice field is that it's only 20 minutes away from the university. And my first class all week during hunting season is 10 o'clock. So I can go out there, bang a limit of birds, clean my birds, drink one beer, and I can be in class at 10. No problem.
I'd love to be in your class, man. I just, what course do you teach at 10 on those days?
It's a senior level biochemistry. So I got a lot of chemistry majors and a lot of biology pre-med students, pre-dent students.
Yeah. You know. Here's the $55 question. How many of those folks come up to you and say, hey, Professor, can I go duck hunting with you?
They don't say that, but they say everybody knows. I mean, I have a reputation. I hunt in shorts and a t-shirt and you know, I just go out there and spray down with mosquitoes. I hunt with flip-flops. Yeah. And I'll go out there and I'll kick my flip-flops off. And when I'm helping my dog retrieve birds, when I'm wading out to turn the mojo on. So what I do is I come to the camp. First thing I do is I get a water hose and rinse all the mud off of the feet, put my flip-flops back on, and I come to class. It's about the other day I was teaching, and this girl says, because I throw the strap over my shoulder and walk out of the field with it. And my this one girl's just staring at me like, and I said, Emma, are you, what's wrong? Are you okay? She goes, is that blood on your shirt? And I looked down on my left breast. I had a spot of blood. It must've been about a bigger ounce of silver dollar.
Oh.
I didn't even know it was there, but yeah, those blood would bleed on you.
The blood of many teals on your shirt.
or one really pummeled teal.
There you go. That's great. That's great. So the drought situation, I mean, we get a chuckle out of the results of your overcoming that, but it's a serious thing. It's ongoing, right? I mean, you're still.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean,
what's it going to take to break it?
Yeah. We had a big area of rain out in the Gulf of Mexico, a little disturbance that came up, and we just got the edge of it. I was hoping to get 2 or 3 inches of rain, which is nothing. I mean, I live in an area where we get about 65 inches of rain a year. So it's one of the wettest areas in the country.
Uh-huh.
And we got about 0.2 inches, about a fifth of an inch. And that was,
wow.
But the marshes I hunt right now are just almost dry. No one can hunt them during teal season. No one can get a boat in.
Wow. So your teal area, is that accessible to you during the regular duck season down there?
That was a rice field. I usually don't hunt out there. I usually stay in Texas and hunt marshes with some friends. But, what my buddy does is he usually leases some of those places out to companies. So, mm-hmm. But one of the guys who leases said, man, you can come hunt with me anytime. I'm looking actually right now at maybe kayaking into some of those areas in the marsh that are just if it has 4 inches of water, I can get a kayak through there. Somewhere.
Sure.
So I'm looking at, I'm scrambling right now.
As is everybody, and praying for rain. Yeah. So
right.
Let's play a 2-minute drill here. We've got about 3 minutes left before I need to let you go. Used to be a guide when you were a young man. Pros and cons of that. How did you feel about that?
Being a guide's great when you're young. It's super. You're making money hunting. I mean, you have to deal with a lot of, rich. I don't want to offend anybody. I had to deal with a lot of pompous asses that were just, I'll tell you one real quick story. One day we killed a 40 bird limit. I had three sports up from Boston and they had been up drinking all night, which I don't really like, but they were, we killed our last bird. My dog went, God, I said, guys, let's pack up. We're going to jump in the boat and go back. And the guy said, I'm not going anywhere. I started cursing me out. I paid for this hunt. I might, And I said, well, this airboat's leaving, buddy. It's about a 2-mile walk back. I said, and later on, he came, he slept it off and apologized to me. And his buddies came and tipped the hell out of me because they felt so bad. But anyway, guiding's fine. I still have a lot of people after me right now trying to get me to guide. But I'd rather spend my time with friends and family now. That's mm-hmm. what drives me, is to go out in the field with my son or with my buddies and with my, my friends. And that's just, I think when you get older, you view things differently.
That's my
driving force now, to share my time left on this earth with my friends and family out in the field.
There you go. Okay. Next question on the 2-minute drill is duck hunting, waterfowl hunting in general, commercialized to the hilt, or room for expansion?
I don't know. I birds don't come down here like they used to because the agricultural practices have changed. So I go north some. I hunt up in Oklahoma and Kansas, and it's so all the guide services have it locked down. You can't go knock on doors anymore. It's just, it's tough. I mean, we used to be able to do that 15 years ago, but now, it's commercialized.
What's the future? What's 10 years out going to look like? What do you think?
I don't know. That's a good question. Maybe you could, I don't know. I mean, that's all conjecture. I just don't know. With climate change, that's going to be part of it. And
I just
don't know. I that's a good question. And bird populations. Yeah. If we continue to have droughts up on the prairies, our bird population is going to crash. So
right, and we're losing as we've seen recently. We're seeing a consistent loss of the older hunter and the non-committed hunter.
Yeah.
From waterfowling for various reasons, and we won't go into those. Okay, another 2-minute drill question. What do you usually shoot? What's your pet shotgun?
Oh man, I have a Browning A5. I love my old Benelli Supernova. I've got 8 of them. I still break out when my first gun I got when I was in 7th grade for Christmas was a old Remington Wingmaster, 870 Wingmaster, 20 gauge. And I still break it out. I tell you what I do, Gordy. When I'm struggling with my shooting, I'll bring that old Wingmaster out because I know that I'm shooting 2 3/4 inch, 20 gauge loads. And it makes you focus on and not get in a hurry because you know you got to make those shots count.
Absolutely.
So when I'm struggling with mechanics, I'll bring that old Wingmaster out.
Absolutely. I knew you were going to say 870 Wingmaster in there somewhere. I'm a shotgun platoon guy too. I'll take a variety of different shotguns over the course of a hunt, or a season. But that Wingmaster, just everybody seems to be able to shoot it well. I mean, it's just such
so balanced. Yeah. It was such a. I don't know why they stopped making those. That was to me the classic gun back in the 70s.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And then your dog. Everybody's going to want to know what kind of a dog you run. You have a dog, right?
I run a black lab right now. His name is Onyx. I call him Ani. He just crossed the 3,000 bird bearer. He's 6 years old. He's got 3,275 retrieves. I have a big Excel spreadsheet of all his retrieves.
Yeah, I'm, as a scientist, I'm not surprised at that. All right. Once again, Mark Merchant, Waterfowl Cuisine from Field to Table is the name of the cookbook. It's not just a cookbook. It's good reading. And tell us one more time, Mark, how to get a hold of them in brief.
You can get a hold of me at mmerchant@mcneese.edu, or you can look me up on Facebook, MarkMerchant. I look forward to hearing from all you guys. And by all means, guys, have a great season and be safe out there. That's the main
thing. Excellent. Good word, man. Good show. And thanks for being with us, Mark. I appreciate it. And best of luck this season. And I hope it rains.
Boy, I mean, we need it. Thanks a lot, Gordy. You too.
You bet. Here are some of the great people that keep things going behind the scenes at 870 The Flyway. Timekeeper in traffic, Gladys Overwith. Duck call consultant is OU Scaredum. Our gunsmith is Rusty Steele. Don Fulham is our decoy expert. Makeup is by Gladys Radio. Transportation coordination, Lisa Carr. Shooting instructor is OU Mistum. And Izzy Lost is our retriever trainer. Phil Airtime does talent coordinator. Copyright Airtime, Pat Pending, and credit card consultant Max Stout. Thanks, everybody. Special thanks this week to catering coordinators Midnight Pizza. Midnight Pizza of 12 locations in the greater Tri-County area. Midnight Pizza, when you're desperate for pizza at midnight, it's got to be a Midnight Pizza. It's the one on top of the cardboard circle. Midnight Pizza.
This has been a Filmways presentation, darling.